When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
What's good, internet? It is August 14th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 88, coming at you from Brooklyn, New York, here in Lobby 1. We are not streaming live because time is hard to deal with sometimes.
Time dot is hard,
you know? Exactly. How's everybody doing?
That's a reference nobody understands.
That's not true. People know about time dot is.
You've talked about it on podcasts.
I've talked about it on multiple podcasts.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's just for the true fans.
Yeah.
Just for the loyal
hardcore
listeners.
For the true followers.
Of Waypoint and all of us. How's everybody doing? It's just you. It's just us three today. Rob is out.
Danica
is behind me doing social media work, I think. How's everyone's weekend? Other than really fucking stressful.
Yeah.
Man.
Some bad things going on in our country.
Some fucking bad things going on in our country, y'all. It has been... So I was out of town. I was like, okay, I'm going to take Friday off and I'm going to go to New Jersey. I'm going to see my family. And it was just like... Friday night, so it actually started really well. I got home on Friday night, and I brought home one of the gaming laptops we have here so that I could play No Man's Sky, the new patch-dropped Atlas Rises, which is, like, it promises, like, 30 new hours of story content. And by that, I mean, like, any natural story.
There's a story now.
There are characters, mission objectives, side missions, like, all sorts of other stuff. But, you know, and it was really cool. So I got home, and I played that for, like, 5 hours with my mom. My mom just, like, watched me start a new game and explore a bunch of planets. And
do you need to start a new game in order to enjoy any of that stuff? Like, what happens to it mid-save?
You can totally jump in, but also... I tried jumping into my old save, and my base was under the ground, that I'd built. Most people haven't built bases, so that's not a problem. but I really wanted to see it from the jump. I wanted to see what the new player experience really looked like.
Right.
Like, from you start the game, how quickly do you get into the story stuff? And it's actually set up really well with some good hooks to, like, drag. If you just follow what is the main storyline... Only a few hours in, you're getting objectives that kind of teach you, that tutorialize some of the more interesting systems in the game around resource management and resource collection and, you know, building different types of equipment and stuff like that. And more importantly, like, there's just kind of an interesting story now. There's a character. Like, there are characters. There are multiple characters now and not
what
just,
that,
like...
Yeah, what does that actually look like? Because there was a, quote, story in the first
version,
sort of.
I'll give you just, like, a very brief moment, which is, like... I arrived into a – the thing that I need to find the time to write about today or tomorrow is just it's been interesting to go from a game that was profoundly lonely, and I mean that in terms of its design as much as its tone. It was a game that really had a bunch of, you know, empty NPCs who would give you equipment you could trade with, but that didn't have any characterization. It had originally had kind of two NPCs that had any characterization, and these characters called Nada and Polo, who were like explorers kind of like you, but they kind of were very vague, and then it had the kind of big Atlas structures that you went to and got kind of vaguely philosophized at. But it didn't have any like characters who were doing things in the world who had their own agendas or who had their own ideas or anything like that outside of Nada and Polo, who didn't feel like they were actually characters in any sort of larger story. Now, there was this moment going from that where, like, you're basically the only mover in the world to this moment where I got into a new space, like, sector, And suddenly my ship starts beeping at me, and it's like, oh, incoming communication. It's like, wait, what? Like, since when is there an incoming thing, anything like an incoming communication? And then you hit it, and it's like someone is saying, like, hey, is anyone out there? Help, help, help. You know, and it goes, you end up going down a whole thing of trying to locate where they are by triangulating where you're at, and then trying to, you have to go interact with somebody to try to get them to give you, like, the star field, like, reading of where you're at and compare it to their star field reading. But to do that, you need to raise your rank with their faction, so it like introduces you to the faction reputation mechanics. And to do that now, you can do all the stuff you used to be able to do, which was just like help people when pirates attack or trade with them or give them certain items. But there's also now a whole side mission board where you can just take missions like go hunt this animal or go find these rare minerals or deliver this package, all procedurally generated stuff, all kind of like, it's not like super interesting by any means, but it's cool to just say, here is a small objective for you to do in this really pretty world.
That, yeah, like, that's huge.
It's because huge.
As someone that didn't get what someone like you got out of just, mm-hmm. like, the lonely exploration part of No Man's Sky, like, I enjoyed that game for 5 hours and then was just like, okay, and just dropped it completely. Even just having the littlest to hang on to, like, to go, like, why should I go do that? Or why should I go do that? And that sounds encouraging. I don't know if it's enough for me to want to, especially given how busy things are
right
now.
It's such a busy season, like, yeah. But it's cool, and, like, it's spooky in a way that was not there before for me. Like, I found there's an alien. There are more alien planets. More interesting looking ships have been added to. But like there was this one planet that I'm just going to describe that I didn't. So it was the last. It was after 5 hours. My mom and I have been playing this game. She'd been watching me play it. She'd read me write about it before. I was visiting her and my stepdad and the rest of my family. And so it was like, oh, I'm just going to sit down and show her what this game is that I've spoken about so often. And we kind of come into this last sector. I'm like, oh, I'll just look at one more planet, kind of. And it looks broken. It looks like, oh, that can't be right. Like, there's hexagons all from space looking down at this planet. There are these giant hexagonal patterns, where just, like, huge divots in the Earth itself or in the planet. And I'm like, that's, oh, fuck, it bugged out. Like, I'm playing on PC. I guess something didn't load in.
It was a Borg planet.
And I started going closer. And then inside of every hexagon is another set of hexagons. And then inside of every hexagon is another set of hexagons. And I land, and it's like the whole planet is like tiny little tiles, and every tree is like pearlescent, but with these hexes built out of it. And it's like an entire synthetic planet. And like the entire practice of seeing something that's strange in a game where I've become so used to seeing what the algorithm produces, like, oh yeah, this is a desert planet, and like maybe it's an especially cool desert planet or an especially cool toxic planet or whatever, but it's a toxic planet. Even just seeing one new type of thing there was like, whoa, okay, they're doing some shit here. And then that stuff ends up clearly hooking into what some of the mainline story stuff is. And so, like, moments like that, you know, moments where you're like, oh, I'm working towards this goal, and then, oh no, there's a twist, and then I don't get the goal, and now another guy, I have to deal with this other character who's also working towards a goal. Like, that stuff is just not there before, and it's weird because I came to that game always feeling like it was going to scratch an itch, like Minecraft for me, more than like a single player story game. I was never looking for Knights of the Old Republic. I was never really looking for even Freelancer or something like that. I was always just looking for something to podcast to or decompress with.
Sure.
So it's interesting for it to now be offering. I never thought there'd be a day when I would want to go back to No Man's Sky to see what was happening with a character, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm going to stick with it. And so then I stopped playing that day. That night, we put it away, and I was like, oh, let me just open up Twitter and see what's going on. And then I was like, oh, white supremacists are what is going on. I'm going to need way more time with No Man's Sky to decompress.
But that's Twitter every day.
Well, that is Twitter every day. That's fair.
Sadly.
Yeah. Yeah, but so we saw what was going on in Charlottesville, and that was on Friday night. So that was the kind of first steps of the rally with the tiki torches, and that was like, oh, this fucking sucks. And I had a gut feeling that things were not going to get better from there, but I did not anticipate how shitty that weekend would go. I don't know. I guess it was already shitty with like the photos of a bunch of white supremacists like surrounding a handful of students, like brave students who were counter protesting and like
With torches.
I know. Ugh.
Jesus Christ.
And then, I guess it didn't feel like as bad because unfortunately we've seen that before. Like this situation is not new in 2017. The tiki torch thing has played out specifically before and just petered out after that evening or that weekend.
That weekend
and was largely uneventful, other than just highlighting how far this country still has to go despite the lies it tells itself.
Yep. Yep. Constantly. And then Saturday, you know, obviously it is one of those moments that I think we will remember for a while as being an illustration of where things are in 2017. I guess there's a chance some people don't know about what happened, right?
There's certainly a chance.
So during the – there was a kind of alt-right white supremacist rally in which a bunch of neo-Nazis and like modern-day Klan affiliates and other white supremacist, white nationalist groups were organizing in Charlottesville, Virginia, to ostensibly to protest the removal of a Robert E. Lee statue, but more than that, really to just organize. Right, like, I think that's one of the big takeaways from this event this weekend was these are groups who were all vaguely aligned, but moments like this are to me one of the more frightening things under the Trump presidency in which these groups that used to squabble over little bits, are they white nationalists who care about white culture, or are they white supremacists who care about genetic superiority? Are they
advocating genocide?
Right.
Which flavor of insanity?
And it all happens on the internet, by and large,
or
in small meetings that happen out of in the shadows. Like it's not something that is happening in front. Proud, emboldened, as though they feel energized.
Waving Nazi flags, you know, wearing
proudly.
Not just proudly, but like aggressively.
With M16, also aggressively.
Holding assault rifles.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think that this thankfully created also a large amount of counter-protest. A lot of people who were anti-fascists showed up. A lot of people who were, you know, left-wing.
A lot of clergy also showed up.
Cornel West was there.
Cross-section of people.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, it turns out lots of people fucking hate Nazis.
Yeah.
Same.
As it turns out.
Yes. Well, yep. It should be.
Well.
Many sides. Fuck out of here, Trump. In the process that followed, there was a moment in which one person who came from Ohio rammed a car into a group of counter-protesters, killing Heather Heyer, who was a woman who was there to protest the arrival of the white supremacists there. It's just brutal. It was just like
19 injured, something like
19 injured, five were critically injured.
Yeah.
Also, two cops died from a helicopter accident.
Crash, freak helicopter crash. Yeah.
Yeah. Associated. I mean, they were going to observe the protests and all that. And it was just one of those moments of just like, I think we've talked about this over and over again. We've had reason to, of like, how do we reach out from our positions and try to push things? How do we help people from here? And it was definitely like one of those weekends. Like, I'm glad I'm with my family, but I'm also like eager to try to figure out how to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, I wished I had gone.
Yeah,
I wished I had known more about
it. Like
just
your EMT
just
blood,
as an EMT, exactly.
Also your MMA blood.
Hey, also my absolutely punching and mending people. Both
it
of those
means
things.
You could have gotten into a fight with someone and then healed them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like I'm saying, it's job security. No, but really, when I saw what had happened, I started like rapidly tweeting, like, in case anybody's looking at Twitter, mm-hmm. here's what you do to keep somebody alive while help arrives, basically, and really felt a lot of. Like, why the hell am I not there mm-hmm. being a street medic at this counter protest? Like,
yeah.
I should. I have this training. I should be using it for this purpose. Like, I definitely had that in my heart, and it lit a real fire under my ass to actually go to more protests and to do more specific street medic training. Because obviously I know what to do on an ambulance.
I should learn how to splint a wound. And
I can
like,
show you that.
You should.
I can show you that right now.
Basics.
You know?
Not right now. We're not streaming.
Right.
So we
this is a different podcast that we'll do.
Yeah,
you know,
we'll talk
how to be alive in 2017. Yeah. That'll be a good
That's a good series name. Yeah, that's a good everything name. So yeah. So I don't know. It's one of those things I think we'll end up probably talking about here or there. And for me, it's one of those things where this is not a freak incident. This is a thing that represents a specific history. This is not a thing that is is, like you said, it's something that used to be something that only happened in our lifetimes in the corners of the internet, we thought. And so to see it so flagrant does represent – it's like I'm kind of torn between two things. Like on one hand, racism is here. It has always been is core to America. Yeah. It is – frankly, it is core to what we think of as American values. Like they weren't defined against racism. They were defined inside of it. They were just defined with it in mind. And so every time that we try to recover some part of an America that we love, we have to always be contending with the fact that that vision of America was at once tied up with racist white supremacist views. And so I want to not dismiss the notion that this is nothing new, that in fact this is just one more step in a long heritage, a long history of terrible, virulent anti-blackness, anti-Semitism, terrorism, racism, you know, homophobia, everything, right?
All like, the isms. Let me tell you, all
those
the
folks
obvious.
Are shitty.
Yeah.
but also, I want to also be able to say at the same time, this marks a return to a virulence that we hadn't seen in public in quite some time. It's not that dog whistles were better necessarily, but it's that I didn't feel as unsafe with dog whistles. I felt like the fact that we pushed them to dog whistles was proof of gained ground. It doesn't mean you've won the fight, but it means that you've made some push. And so, I don't know, it is frustrating to see us back here, but also like you, I'm trying to get fired up, trying to get out there.
The problem with dog whistles, as much as they are a rhetorical victory, it also allows a lot of well-meaning people to ignore or be accidentally ignorant of what is actually happening. I think part of the reason that Charlottesville hit as hard as it did was I think for a lot of people, it was this frank firsthand seeing like, oh, is this actually, this is a thing? Like this is out there? People are doing this? Like I think there are a lot of people that think America is better off than it actually is, not because they choose, not because they are wouldn't be willing to denounce white nationalism or white supremacy, because they genuinely think things like Barack Obama's presidency meant the country was on a better track. They don't get exposed to the hatred and the suppression and the other things that are playing out in the country. And so to see it so nakedly, so brazenly out there, I think for a lot of people was a wake up call to like actually. Like, as much as you might want to think we shouldn't give this oxygen, we shouldn't give it attention, the fact that it's being given oxygen's attention is finally a chance to examine, like, the underbelly of America that hasn't, that has gone unnoticed, that has gone unchallenged. And, and the only way that you stop that out is by challenging it, not by ignoring it.
Totally.
Yes.
It even draws that line very clear, or reveals a line between the dog whistle and the you know, the car slamming into somebody, right? Like the reason that one of the reasons that the white supremacist movement in America is so strong is because it is not denounced often. It is not denounced powerfully. It is there in terms of policy. There have been moves away from investigating white nationalist terrorism in this country, and. Importantly, like I don't know, like the thing that kept sticking with me was how do they recruit? How do they recruit so young? What is being what failure is being made on both the left and the right in this country in terms of appealing to young people, especially young white dudes, and like I'm not just appealing to them, but like making it clear that being a Nazi fucking sucks, like, and that there are better ways forward, right? And like, what do we do in terms of giving? Visions of what it means to be a good person and a successful person with in ways that actually can counter that stuff. And also, how do we deny them space? Like, how do we deny that this is a thing that I'm willing to live with, like near, I'm willing to fuck with in any way? But also, it's been making it also, I hope, has made clear that like one of the ways we get here is through dog whistle politics.
Yeah.
It's a life of hearing, you know, welfare queens and young bucks and hearing, you know,
build the wall
and you know, what the fuck do you say? Bad hombres.
Bad
Fuck
I think
off.
He said it with a huh.
He did
the
say hombres.
Yeah. It's worse. Right,
so,
right.
So like, I hope that this is one of those moments where we can think about how, you know, it's not like flipping a switch. He doesn't say bad hombres and then a switch is flipped and now there are 12 people got turned into white nationalists. But it builds – it is the foundational structure
it
on which –
It excuses a lot of it.
Exactly.
It emboldens
and it makes them like – it opens the door for like the 47-year-old like white supremacist leader to like come in and build that bridge from – general agitation, a feeling of depression and anxiety about the world, a feeling like they've lost something even though they haven't, to this thing that is actual open white supremacy, and like figure out how to break that bridge and instead build bridges towards some sort of larger set of identity feelings. Like this is the thing, like you think about Heather Heyer, who again we lost in Charlottesville this week. That was someone who was deeply committed to justice, to fairness, to equality, who was willing to risk her life for it, and who lost her life in defense of it. And like, how do we encourage more people to be like that? And that's a hard question, but just one I'm like pretty determined to think about in the near future.
And I think it's worth asking to people who play games. I think it's very worth asking to people who have these notions of wanting to save the world, right? That's what fuels a lot of gameplay, is fantasy fulfillment and wish fulfillment and wanting to be a hero and wanting to be something in the world, right? Yeah. I think there's something about that instinct that could be a ripe space for actually building good bridges and not
totally
being absolute shit.
Well, we see it. We do see that the thing that's tough is that like the game's space has both harbored and fed like the worst sorts of white nationalism, and also has been a place where marginalized people can come together, can find each other, can build community.
Absolutely.
And so one of the things that is really interesting is like thinking about games themselves. Is there something that we should look at inside of games themselves that are not – like I'm not saying that certain games dog whistle. Certain games do dog whistle. Absolutely. Certain games do have their own sets of dog whistles around race and sexuality and politics. But is there a way to think about and reward or support games that do – produce fantasies that are not just
destructive
or exploitative, or I don't know. And that doesn't mean giving them a higher review score or something. But it means like it's not something I think of, it's not something that I think a lot of us think about in our criticism. Like I think we're really good at calling out shit when it's bad. Like I'm pretty good at identifying when a game slips into racist trope, or when it is like deeply sexist, or when it is colonialist, right? Like I think it's a lot harder, and maybe that's just because the set of games, especially in the AAA space, aren't as good often at like providing a fantasy that is productive, that is utopian, that is like something that we can learn from. It was really weird showing No Man's Sky to my parents and having them go like, "Well, wait, what? Like, so how many? Like, what's the who's the enemy?"
Right.
And
who
like,
do you
well,
kill?
you can fight stuff. There are missions, I guess, now to go fight the robots, but like, and there are bounty hunting things, but like that's not. Like, I just come to this game to explore stuff and see really pretty worlds. And, like, yeah, maybe there's actually still an element of colonialism here.
For sure.
In some regard, I think it's worth taking into consideration. But it's also a game that does not fundamentally make me imagine myself as a really good killer. Whereas my favorite game this year, two of my favorite games this year, Zelda and Battlegrounds, fundamentally, like, I got real fucking good at killing things. And that's okay. I love those games.
Right.
But, like, I would also love that more games to explore those other sorts of fantasies and embolden me to work with other people and consider what a better world might look like. I don't know. It's interesting. It's an interesting dilemma.
It sure
and
is.
A heavy one. A game that does not, I think, take this super seriously is Agents of Mayhem.
Yeah.
Agents of Mania?
Agents of Mania.
Agents of Sonic Mania?
Age of Mayhem. Age of War?
Age of...
Agents of Mayhem,
May.
The new...
Agents of May.
Agents of May. That would actually...
Mayhem,
that's a new
colon,
Overwatch.
Mania Rising.
It's a new Overwatch character.
I think
Agents of May
might actually be a communist thing. I think actually...
I hope it is.
It's not. Agents of Mayhem is out this week, Patrick, is that right?
Yeah, it comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's a game... So it's by Volition. It is by what's left of Volition, or a new kind of a younger team at Volition than some of the people who were working on the previous Saints Row games.
Yeah, a lot of people following the release of Saints Row the Fourth. Is that mm-hmm. one? Was that mm-hmm. Saints Row? 4?
Saints Row Four. They just called Saints Row the Third.
And then it was
Saints
Row Four. Saints
Row Four,
yeah.
Which is a bummer.
There was a lot of turnover after that game came out. Not because I think that studio like was going through any issues. It was just. They were clearly going to move on from that franchise, and some people left to go do other things. And so Agents of Mayhem is the first game that they've put out since a lot of... It technically takes place in the Saints Row universe, I believe.
Okay, so
Yeah, it takes, let's dive
future,
in.
Do you, right? You, it's in well, the future of the Saints Rowverse.
So, okay, so what do you remember about the end of Saints Row 4? Without getting into too much of a spoiler territory.
It was all a simulation.
In Saints Row 4.
Yes. That's what you just asked.
I was just making sure in my own head.
There's a dance. There's a Montel Jordan dance.
They also end up delving into some time travel.
Yes.
Right.
And also weird split, like, timelines.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So, it takes... So, at the end, one of the ends of the Saints Row 4 Gat Out of Hell expansion, where they go to hell to rescue Johnny Gat.
Oh, I didn't play that.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
They, one of the endings lets them recreate Earth, and this is in that Earth.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
So it is technically in the Saints Row universe, well, like, if not the Saints Row world, because there's multiple worlds in
right.
this universe.
It also takes place in Seoul, South Korea. Like, that's the city, which okay. is fine. Yeah. It's just weird because all the other Saints Row games took place in fictionalized versions of cities.
Right,
of
like
real
Steel
cities.
City.
Right.
Right, yeah, Steelport yeah. and Stillwater, right, which are right. like Chicago and Detroit, I want to say,
yeah.
maybe. Anyway, you're a secret agent. You're like, what if G.I. Joe was allowed to curse? That's the pitch on this game, basically. What if G.I. Joe had attitude?
Oh.
Yeah, what if they could talk about fucking?
Oh.
That's basically it. It's weird.
Which,
it's
one of the characters does.
Yeah, yeah, totally. What do you think of the characters, Patrick? How far in are you?
Well, let's see. The embargo allows us to talk about our first 5 hours, but I've played okay. probably twice that.
I've played about five, so I'm safe.
Okay. And I could speak to most of my feelings on that game in that first 5 hours. I mean, yeah. I guess we should set up sort of the structure first, is that rather than creating your own character like you did in yes. Saints Row and then sort of playing sort of a nameless avatar that participates in a story around you.
Hey, your name was Boss. Thank you very much in the Saints yeah. Row games.
In this one, you're playing a set series of characters. At all times, you have access to three different characters that you can hot swap between on the D-pad or...
Yeah.
I'm sure a keystroke on your keyboard and you can eventually have up to 15, I believe, different agents. But you start out with three and then you recruit more as you play through the game and do side missions and stuff like that. I think Austin and I, you and I talked about this privately over the weekend.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've played a game with a slower, more awkward, boring start than Agents of Mayhem, especially for a game.
Did you play Skyward Sword?
Yeah.
Not to totally derail you, but...
Well, I guess the difference... Well, yeah, I guess Skyward Sword did get kind of interesting later, but Agents of Mayhem has a similar problem with Skyward Sword, where it starts extremely slow, boring, and then only gets interesting later, but at a point that I can imagine I might lose a lot of people along the way.
Especially for a series, like, not... It isn't Saints Row 5, but the Saints Row games... As far back as 2, frankly, have all had really good starts.
Yeah.
Like, 3 and 4 both have fucking
killer. Oh, 3
killer.
Especially.
They both have,
really
incredible starts.
The Kanye West song.
I know, shooting people through. This is, like, the opposite of that. It's, like, slow treks through, like, really unmemorable, bland, like... enemy, like, again, like, it's like going against Cobra or something in G.I. Joe, just like, oh, it's a big computer, it's a shitty, like, gray room, it has, like, there's some lights, there are some nameless guys you shoot, there's, like, nothing bombastic, there's nothing memorable, there's nothing, like, punchy about the start, and it's like, oh, well, now you can switch characters, oh, this thing's gonna blow up, it's a mega weapon, and, like, it's really boring, and
well,
the characters are all boring.
Like the star of this game, more than anything... is the characters. And yeah. the three characters they choose to give you at the beginning, you have no choice over your squad. You start with three characters that are placed in the world, like they're in the cutscenes, like the game finds ways to let you sort of like play any characters you want later on, and it finds story ways to make that work. But you're stuck with these first three characters that are, especially having unlocked a bunch of others since, like the yeah. most boring, generic, least interesting character. Like, you have an assault rifle guy that shoots
yep.
grenades. You have a girl with dual pistols that are really fast. You have a dude with a shotgun.
A big guy with a shotgun.
Fine if those characters existed in the game in the same way that lots of shooters have pistols and shotguns and
yep.
machine guns as like, that's just sort of like default things in these types of games. But it wasn't until I got a couple of hours in and then started going on some optional quests to unlock some of the other agents that and then discovered, oh, wow, this game is doing some really interesting things with some bizarre mechanics for its characters. Like, now I have this really, like, when I'm approaching a situation, I have this really badass bow and arrow girl
that
can just do these amazing headshots. She has, she does a lot with area of effect weaponry. So, like, she can cause, like, poison or slow down. And
she's
so
like a doctor. She's like a doctor from Bombay who is, like, trying to cure her people. And so she's going after this secret terrorist organization.
Nice.
To, like, get, and she's like, and also the bow just, the bow feels so good. The bow feels so much better than every other weapon in the
Well, it has, like, this, it has, like, a very specific, at least I'm playing this on a controller, so I'm sure there's a little bit of auto aim happening. But, like, I have to aim just, like, the game is, it's a shooter, but it's not, you know, about accuracy, like, let's say in the way, like, Battlegrounds is, like, the way they've made the bow and arrow feel good is, like, you kind of just barely shoot it vaguely in that direction, and it kind of takes care of itself, and it feels very satisfying to pull off. And when you start combining, like, these area of effect options with some of the, like, the lineup I'm working with now is her, who has the bow and arrow and area of effect. I have another character that has sort of like this continuous energy weapon that never runs out of ammunition, and the longer that you're holding the charge on an enemy, it's like building up a multiplier over time, so you're like trying to focus your hits continually. In addition to that, she can throw down a drone that can do like attacks on other enemies, because your main weapon is meant to be a continual rate of fire on a single enemy, while the drone is like buying you time while you're trying to take down that one. And then my third one is, I just switched, is this a Scottish soccer fan who has just this fucking amazingly brutal assault rifle and shotgun combination. So I don't have to choose between the two. I hold down X and he swaps, his gun swaps modes. It's really powerful. His special attack, you have to run into a series of enemies, absorb a bunch of damage, and then explode that. It's just a really interesting combination of characters that has me swapping between them constantly, depending on my situation, depending on what makes sense.
And there's a lot of mobility in the combat in this game. Yes. It reminds me a lot of the Mass Effect Andromeda combat, which I also liked. Lots of so in this game, you can triple jump with a lot of characters. There's a dash. So there's lots of like side dashing and like setting up, like lining up a bunch of targets that wants to do a huge AoE attack, or you know, it feels like very dynamic. There's a lot of times when I'm playing where I'm like, oh, I know what I'll do is I'll jump up to this roof and then I'll jump down and do this big attack or whatever. And that stuff feels really good. And it's frustrating to have it presented in a way that I think that like some of the characters are actually okay and pretty funny. Like every third or fourth line will make me like chuckle, but every third or fourth line will make me grimace like terribly.
Oh, no.
And it's like so like we say hit or miss all the time. Normally that's like a way of softening what we mean is bad. This is really hit or miss, and it is. I have to get deeper into it to see if it ever evens out a little bit. But also the structure is just weird. Like all these side characters that Patrick is talking about are from optional missions that you only get if you like dig into the menu and find like, oh yeah, hey, I'll do a side mission to go recruit somebody. They're not in the mainline story. And to switch missions, you have to go back to the base. You have to. There's so many loading
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
There are so many loading screens. Let's say you want to change your character lineup even. You can't do that from a menu, right? Am I wrong about that? I think I'm right about that. I have not yet unlocked the ability to, if I have three characters I want to trade out two of them, I have to hit start, go back to our HQ, find the thing to just go back out into the world, change my lineup, and go back in. But also,
if you can do that from a menu, I haven't seen it,
me either.
I think that's even if you can, it speaks to the game's completely atrocious, unintuitive UI that we didn't find that, because like Like, so for example, this game has an interesting meta layer to it where, kind of like an Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, you can send off agents you aren't using in your squad to go accomplish, like, little missions, and they do it automatically. It's on a timer. It gets you different valuables that you can use to buy new different things. Like, it's a fun use of agents you aren't using or have chosen that you don't find their powers to be complementary to your playstyle. You have something you can go do, but those, so like what happened is like you'll be in the middle of a mission, and a lot of these sort of meta missions like are on between 5 and 15 minutes. So you'll be in the middle of a mission and says like, hey, this character's come back and they've brought back your shit. And it's like, cool, like go send them out on another one. Well, you can't do that mid-mission.
Oh,
you have to then hopefully have hit a checkpoint, cancel your progress, go back to the arc, go into that menu, assign them to a new one, go back to that mission. Once you're at the checkpoint, it'll just drop you back into the world, and hopefully it drops you at a place that's convenient or near where that mission starts up again, or else you're going to spend 45 seconds to a minute getting in a car, getting over there.
Yep.
And the way you're constantly going back to this hub area ruins your ability to even I can't even tell you if the version of Soul they've built is interesting, because I spend so little time in it, because the moment you finish a mission, you go back to the arc. The moment you go embark on a new mission, you're sent back into Soul, and you're going immediately to that next mission. Whereas like the way these open worlds are supposed to work is that it's all interconnected, and you're staying in that world so you can learn its layout. This game, like a lot of other open world games, and in a crackdown-like fashion, has lots of loot chests and upgrades that are hidden around. But
and
there's no
basically agility orbs in that game too. But like, you're never just in the world exploring, piecing it together in your head so that you like. I could today tell you the basic layout of the crackdown map. I don't know that I'll ever be able to say that about Soul. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's frustrating because it's a game that has good stuff in it in the first 5 hours that I've played, and is really bad at getting it in front of you. Is really bad at like getting you to the good stuff and letting you determine your own level of engagement with that stuff. You're either all the way in, or like Patrick said, have to completely eject and abort back to base, and like, and it just like breaks up the flow. Like that so sucks. Much of it's one of those things that we don't talk about enough is how does this game present itself to me in terms of letting me spend time with it and getting access to the stuff that's really good. Like, the best example ever for me is like you think about the Tony Hawk games and like being able to hit start, hit pause, and then hit restart super quickly so that you're never like stuck in a loading screen when you fuck up. You're never like, this is a bad run, I have to wait for another minute and a half, or I have to go back to a loading screen. Like, it's one of those loops that just lets you continually be in the space that you want to be with a game. And when games do that well, it's fantastic. Like Zelda Breath of the Wild this year does it super well too, which is like, oh, actually, I don't want to be here at all. I want to be way over here. I'm going to be doing this shrine. Like, the way that it let you do that stuff was like so useful in terms of letting you move through the world and letting you do the thing you want to be doing at any given moment. And not every game has to do that, but games that are about that sort of
open world,
you know, action games that are not about, like, I don't want Battlegrounds to be able to do that sort of like offer me that sort of flexibility. But even Battlegrounds says that, like, I can get out of a match super quick and get into a new one if I want to super quick. Like, it would be such a different thing if that was a game that like I had to pause the game to go into my inventory, you know, or something. Like, there are ways that they could have done it worse, and they did it better. So, I don't know. I'll stick with it a little bit.
It's just it's too bad. Like, I now where I'm at in the game, I am really enjoying parts of it, specifically probably what was the root of what they built this game around. Yeah. Like, the original idea was, like, these character dynamics that play out based on the squad lineup that you're choosing and how those powers interact and play off one another. But I'm spending, like, this game probably, I'm going to, based on my progress, probably takes like between like 25, 30 hours to kind of like do a bunch of the side stuff and finish the campaign. My guess is I'm going to waste like 3 to 5 hours just fighting through menus to like it's just the lack of streamlining, the lack of an intuitive way to get to the good stuff. Like, so I think a lot of people are going to bounce off this game specifically because of the way it introduces itself.
Does the arc ever start to feel like more of an actual place you'd like to be in? Like, I think about in Mass Effect, the Normandy as a place that's like, oh, I liked going home to check in with crew and like feel like I got.
There's none of that. There's no like characters hanging out. There's no like social lounge.
You gotta cut it. That's it.
About.
Like, at that point, bye. Like, I don't want to be like. just put all that shit in menus, or like put it in the world for like if I want to go back there and see trophies or something. But like, don't make me go back to it if I don't need to go back to it. So, ugh. Anyway,
can't make me
Agents of Mayhem.
Agents of May.
Hem, Nia, yeah. Mania, yeah. Because also Mania,
Agents
Sonic
of Mania,
Sonic of Mayhem.
Austin and Patrick, I have an advanced case of Sonic Mania.
Oh no!
Oh yeah,
you're an EMT. What do you do? How do you treat a case?
You have to take in a lot of fluids.
Okay.
Okay, you got to stretch.
Okay.
Get a lot of stretching, a lot of physical therapy. You got to get yourself ready for the blast.
From
the blast
past,
processing.
Okay.
No, Sonic Mania is out tomorrow, I think, at least on consoles, and then it's on the 29th for PC.
Okay.
It is I know how shocking this is going to sound, really, really good 2D Sonic game.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic the in so many bad games that they made a thing called the Sonic Cycle to explain how people could get excited for a new one after all the other ones were so bad.
It's true. Look,
Wait, what's the Sonic
Cycle? You haven't heard of the Sonic Cycle?
It's a thing.
Oh,
it's
go do a Google image search for the Sonic Cycle.
I'm looking
it's essentially
at it right now.
It goes to some places.
That's good.
Very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's basically that, you know, the shorter version of the Sonic Cycle is like a bad Sonic game comes out, enough distance is between you and that bad Sonic game for you to think, well, like maybe this one will be okay.
This is the one.
This is the one.
Enough of them have actually been good. And by that, I mean 1-2 Sonic CD, Colors. Jury is out for me on the Game Boy Advance games because I did not play them. So.
I liked Sonic Adventure 1, but I don't know how much it had to do with me owning a Dreamcast and it was Sonic in 3D.
Yeah.
And also that killer whale scene was pretty good.
Adventure, it was pretty cool.
Adventure Fields or whatever. It's an open world game. You can explore.
It kind of is.
You can talk to people.
Yeah. You can talk to humans. That's
there are humans in that
weird
world all over the place. There's the president, or is the president only in Sonic Adventure 2? I don't remember.
I forget about the president. But there's good in the library. I think people forget that there's good in the library.
The soundtrack to Sonic Unleashed is really good. That game's bad, but that soundtrack is dope.
I played that one.
The soundtrack to Sonic R, very good.
Very good.
Oh, yeah.
That's high class.
Everybody's
right
Super Sonic
Racing. Yep, that's it.
It's
perfect.
Very, very good. This game is absolutely awesome because it knows exactly what was good about the very old games like 1-2 CD.
Knuckles,
right. Is it Knuckles Chaotix? I forget the
Knuckles
name
Chaotix is a
of
different
the third.
Game. Third
game.
It's Sonic 3, and then it's Sonic 3, Sonic and Knuckles, which is the cart that you put it in.
Right.
Knuckles.
That was the
Chaotix
part.
Chaotix is when we got like the alligator and the bee.
Oh.
Yum. There were a lot of bad characters in Knuckles Chaotix.
Yes. Okay, gotcha. So this is harkening right back to 1 and 2, especially.
Just to be clear, it's called Chaotix featuring Knuckles the Echidna. Welcome to the next level in 32X World.
Wow.
That is what the title screen says.
Okay,
Shout outs to my good friends at Run Button who've streamed that game 5 times, and I love it every time.
Sometimes you gotta take one for the team sometimes. I understand.
How is Sonic Mania?
Sonic Mania is awesome. I'll tell you why it's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so you start out in Green Hill Zone. There's actually like a weird little music just started playing.
Yeah.
It's all right. You know, I got excited. I was like, yes, as you start out.
Yeah,
and
the
then
Green
music
Hill Zone
started
music.
Playing.
I don't know what that was. That was weird. My computer just started playing music.
You start out, there's a little cutscene, and there's something to do with Eggman and time warps, whatever. It does not matter, obviously. You start out in Green Hill Zone, and it looks exactly like Green Hill Zone from the early, early games.
Yeah.
The same music. It's not a remix. It's the same exact music. And the very early part of the level feels and looks exactly like those older games. And then you start branching out. You start noticing there's different paths.
Uh-huh.
There's different mini games. There's different, all things that harken back to those older games. There's like a faux 3D mini game where you're running around and collecting, not rings, but actually these little bubbles that make you
that's
go faster.
I think that was Sonic CD had a very,
it's
like the UFO
something
chase.
Something like that. Yeah, the UFO chase,
yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, lifted entirely. It's
just sort of
evoking that. And then by Act 2, it's all new level geography.
Okay.
But with the same looking sprites, the same kind of look and feel, and that's when the music starts getting remixed and starts being like, oh no, this is a new game. This is totally a new game. And there is a boss battle at the end of every level, not every two levels, which is also cool.
Oh, that's cool. Because that's just like cool because those are always some of the most memorable parts
really
of the
fun.
Sonic series.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm fighting this, what's the new Robotnik, like, boss is going to be in this new game. And so getting a bunch of those sounds good.
It's really fun. And a lot of them are very creative. It's not always just, oh, you got to jump.
Yeah, there was one
that
I guess we could talk about now, but I don't know if we should.
I guess we shouldn't. We'll
it's
let
so
people,
good. The end of the
if it's that
plan,
good,
though,
you shouldn't talk about it.
All right. So there's a we should talk
it's
about.
So good.
Wait, you say we should or we shouldn't, Patrick? I think
should not.
Okay, we shouldn't. In fact, I'm saying it on Friday. Yeah, I'm saying we shouldn't, partially because literally when I played that at the pre-E3 event, they were like, "You can talk about everything you played except that boss."
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
So
okay.
I think that embargo is up. You're allowed to.
Yeah.
But like, it's a really cool moment that there are bosses that do things that you do not anticipate from a Sonic boss. It's not just jumping on a Robotnik bot. Right. Sometimes it's like other really cool stuff.
They really took a lot of cool inspiration from Sonic and that sort of slightly wider Sonic universe.
Right.
That
well,
is really fun.
It also actually feels kind of Mario-y to me
in some sense,
which is that levels will often have throwaway mechanics just for that level that's really interesting. That's like, so in the chemical plant zone levels, there are like, you have to charge up certain types of chemicals
like
to make them bouncy. It's like a gel that you make green or something, right, to make it bouncy.
Exactly.
Or like other types of things like that where it's like, oh, just for this level, here is the gimmick to this level that, or here's another gimmick to this level where by the beginning of it, you're like, how the fuck does this work? And by the end of it, you're like, oh, I got it. I just jump off the glowy chemicals and then that'll propel
me
across.
Then I'll stick to that other one and then I can get across. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's really satisfying. Very, very good platforming design. And yeah, exactly. It just takes what was really awesome about those early games, like really, you know, the sense of momentum, the sense of speed, the sense of actually decent platforming sort of mechanics, the actual moment-to-moment gameplay felt good, and turns it into like a really rad new game.
Is the president there? Are there humans?
I have not seen.
What's the story
humans
of
yet.
Sonic Mania?
I think it has to do with time warps and Dr.
Hell
Eggman and many Dr. Eggman.
Wait, question.
Eggman?
Is it Dr. Eggman or is it Dr. Robot? Is it?
Oh God.
What's it say?
Well, in Studiopolis, the third zone, it's saying egg all over the place. There's like a TV show called Eggnog, so I guess they're going with Eggman.
There was always eggs. So like Death Egg in Sonic 2 was Death Egg, but it was still Dr. Robotnik.
Right.
And then in Sonic Adventure, I believe is when he became Eggman. It's very.
Eggman.
This is
There's
all very.
A lot.
Rob, who is not Rob Zachney, who is our producer, is like, yeah, that's right. That's what it switched
like,
to.
I remember that.
Can we paint Rob Zachney as like a really obsessive Sonic the Hedgehog mythologist?
He's a historian.
He's a historian.
So he's a historian
of Sonic.
Exactly.
Exactly.
No.
Everyone, please just start asking Rob
on Twitter
questions
at Rob Zachney.
Please.
Yep. Ideally, ask them in the form of what if they were like questions about like a Civil War
as a historian, as a Sonic historian.
Right. Exactly.
Tell me,
as a Sonicologist.
Yeah.
Sonic the Hedgehog War.
Yeah. Battle of the Sonic Bulge. Exactly.
The Great War of Mobius. This is. The lore is out there.
The lore is amazing.
You know they canceled the Sonic like Archie comic?
What?
This year. It finally ended. Yeah, which is like it had been a super long running comic that had all sorts of talk to somebody who knows the art of the Sonic Archie comics if you're interested in like wild ass lore because it gets out there.
Are they going to put Sonic in Riverdale? Is that like a season 2 thing?
I hope so.
Season 2. Yeah, that's season
with
2.
With his hair
it's
preserved perfectly.
Yeah, exactly.
The way Archie's hair is as insane.
Exactly. I ship him and Jughead.
Definitely.
But it's like a darker Sonic so that they
What's
really...
his like what's the portmanteau? Is it like
Jonic. Sonhead.
Jonic is really good. But spelled with a U.
I'm now.
Jonic? Maybe? Is that better? Jonic?
I'm checking the internet really quick. Sonic, Jughead.
There's got to be some
images.
Fan art. I know
Let's
there
see
is.
Here. Not enough.
Jughead the Hedgehog?
Y'all need to fix this. By this time next week, I want to see some Sonic and Jughead.
Kissing.
I need them kissing.
They gotta be kissing.
I need them holding hands. Well, no. Listen, well,
stop it.
Yeah.
This is a different kind of Sonic cycle.
I think it's going to do it for us.
Yeah.
We do not have time, sadly, to dip into the question bucket. So, but for next time, if you have questions for the question bucket, you can send them to gamingadvice.com with the subject question. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. I am not a Sonic historian. I don't want to be misrepresented as one. I'm like an amateur Sonic enthusiast.
Fair.
Danielle, where can people find you and all of your fandom for Sonic?
Danielle or I. That's me. I'm also an amateur.
You're also an amateur. Patrick.
Find me at Patrick Klupik telling you that Sonic was never good in the first place. Get over it.
Oh no.
That's
come
not
on.
True. He's just he's
Sonic
trying
just
to get
teasing.
This is a bit.
But come
trying.
On, Mario was way better. So, the idea that people put Sonic and Mario on the same level.
Just turn
come
him
on.
Down when he says all this. Just fade him out. Thank you. You can find everything we do here at Waypoint at waypoint.advice.com. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint. You can find us at facebook.com/waypointvice.
Danica is also in the room.
Danica is here.
Danica the Hedgehog
Danica
is here.
Danica the Hedgehog herself is here. What do you want?
You can find me at Danica Harrod.
Danica Harrod. H-A-R-R-O-D.
Harrod?
Harrod. Yeah, Harrod. Harrod the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
It's different. That's a weird...
Oh. It's different.
That's a whole different
that's
thing.
Different.
I wonder if that exists. There's definitely Jesus the Hedgehog.
Yes, there must be.
I'll check after we're done here. That's going to do it for us today. I think that's all I got. Wow, I'm a mess now.
There's a lot.
What is it that we say to them when we're done? I've lost it.
It's going to be for now and forever, be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.